Lawrence, check the rundown. Everything looks good. You all right?
Bad news. The magician guy, Lance Burton, he dropped out.
What happened?
Apparently, he retired a few years ago. And I booked the wrong Lance Burton. Like, I booked some dude that owns a Kia dealership in Baltimore.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul.
I'm Simon Carnell.
You're still Simon Carnell. We are doing this from the West Coast and the East Coast right now. It's pretty amazing with this thing called the internet. You can do stuff like this.
Yeah, two mag, one mic, live coast to coast. Not live, yeah. Actually, pre-recorded.
Pre-recorded and, well, live at the time. And yeah. So my mic might, our audio might be a little bit different because he's recording on one microphone and I'm recording on my fancy microphone at home with a pillow surrounded about me, so it sounds nice, like a real audio recording.
I'm in a excessively air-conditioned rehearsal studio in upstate New York working on my magnum opus, technically, which doesn't necessarily mean it's good. We're going to find out. It's a now, big, any, new, exciting show.
Is that any relation to Mr. Holland's opus?
I mean, in that hopefully it's good, but apart from that,
good. What is this? Is this something people can come see?
It is. Although apparently we're a week from opening night. It opens exactly 7 days from now, and apparently it's already something like 86% sold out, which is amazing. That's nothing to do with anything I've done. That's the amazing marketing of this theater festival.
And that's really cool.
This is glitches in reality. If you're in Glens Falls, New York State, next week, you might be able to get a ticket. If you're lucky, this is a show I've been working on honestly for about 5 years now, on and off, in various forms, and it has gone through so many forms, and iterations, and trial and error, mostly error, but some things that have worked out, and it's such a saga. One day I'll maybe write a book about it or something, about trying to bring this show to life. But it'll only be worth writing the book if the show ends up being excellent. That's the great tragedy of stories like that.
And how long is this run going for?
The run's a week. We're doing two shows a night for 6 nights, which is insane. Given that it's a 75-minute show, doing two of those a night is going to be... You know, jeez. What? It's still nothing compared to Macau.
It's nothing.
Macau has maybe... And honestly, that's... The more that time goes on, the further we get from it, the more I appreciate the Macau sessions, the more the time Macau, because it has made me so much tougher.
And Simon is referring to the 8 episodes that we did called the Macau Sessions. If you haven't listened to them, you should go back and listen, because you get to see two grown men experience intense depression in a former country, in a foreign country, and but you know, learn lots of things and grow.
You get to see us go into the heart of darkness and come back out.
I think like a year or two from now, I'm going to go back and listen to the first episode and listen to the last episode and just hear how our tone and voice has changed, how our outlook on life has changed. But yeah, I encourage you to go back and listen to that, because if you ever wanted to know what it's like to do like a, I don't know, it's not a Broadway style show, but lots and lots of shows within the course of 3 months and what that does to the human psyche, go check out the Macau Sessions.
Indeed. So yeah, that's coming in useful. I'm going to do infinite shows here, but this time it's really, this is so one of such a baby to me, this show. I've put so much into this over such a long period of time, and the idea that it might finally be coming to fruition is very exciting. But we'll see.
What is that what does that feel like? Because you've done it, yeah, like you said, in iterations, but so what's it like to put it up on its feet in this capacity?
It's sort of, you know, it's like being afraid to love again after having had your heart broken so many times, but finding the strength to open up to the possibility that this time it might work out.
It sounds sappy, but I think that's a perfect description of get going again.
Yeah, because I mean, I've gone through the big issue with this show. Obviously, it's such a long story, but it was this great concept, this great idea, and it always fell down with the finale. I never had a good method, and I went through literally 9 methods over the course of about 3.5 years for the finale, and none of them were good. I just kept trying, and each of those 9 times, I thought, this time, this is the one that's going to work. This will be, nope, this doesn't work. This sucks. Then, okay, no, I've got a new idea. This time, this will work. And again, no, it didn't work. 9 iterations of that over about 3 years, trying to bring this damn thing to life. And we might finally, method 10, 10th method, this time. This time's the charm.
10 times a charm. I guess that kind of brings us into our topic for today, which is to GoPro or to not to GoPro, which sounds like an advertisement for GoPro cameras.
Yeah. But that's, or use a Chinese knockoff.
GoPro or use a Chinese. When to GoPro different. Or when to use a Chinese knockoff.
When to use a budget adventure camera.
So this is kind of something you're able to do because you've done other gigs that have, I would venture to say that this is other gigs have financed this, or is somebody producing this for you? Are you?
I'm being paid a very small amount of money to do this,
gotcha.
Which is fine, because what I'm getting out of this theater festival I'm doing here is actually amazing. It's government arts grant funded, which means it's a not-for-profit organization that specializes in developing theater works into something packageable and tourable. Which is amazing. It's such a great opportunity. And so what I'm getting out of it is a huge amount of time and energy from the team here in developing the show into something better than I'm bringing with it.
Sure.
Working with a set designer, lighting designer, sound designer, creative director. It's incredible. I've never worked with this professional and large a team before on any show I've ever done. But yeah, so I'm getting a small amount of money for my time, which is definitely would not be worth it otherwise, but that's not why we're up here. So yeah, you're right. I'm still living off income from Macau and other gigs.
Sure. So like compared to starting off, I mean, my story is different than yours. I guess all we can do on this topic is just share our personal experience. And yours is you came from a real job and had to make the choice to say, I don't want steady paychecks anymore. I don't want the comfort of a 401k. I'm going to go do magic tricks for a living. And
pretty
what
much.
Did that do to you? Because for me, I mean, I've always kind of been doing this since high school. I've only had like one or two real jobs, luckily and unluckily, for many reasons. But what did that do for you when you finally took the dive and jumped off the cliff?
It was almost exactly like the film depiction of jacking out of the Matrix into the real world way back when, 1999, when that movie came out, and you exit the comfortable, boring, uninspiring, but safe, familiar real world, and you wake up cold, covered in slime, with robots in your face, eating goo in a spaceship, and you lose all comfort, all stability. But you gain, now you're actually free, and now you're actually wide-eyed seeing the real world for the first time. It was so much like that, and it's terrifying now. But you are now, for the first time ever, in control of your own destiny. And so it was a very intense experience.
So what, I'm trying to think, what led you to that? If somebody's thinking about going pro, what were the from a real job and, you know, with the American dream, you know, in a real office
yep.
type situation, if they want to go pro, what are the thoughts that kind of crossed your mind?
The thing for me was, I'd always, when I took the job, so I did a 5-year combined arts engineering degree at university back in Australia. I did psychology and software engineering, which cover a lot of bases. I had applied for graduate jobs because I didn't know what else to do with my life at that point. I had no real plan. At that point, I didn't think I could do magic professionally. That wasn't something that occurred to me. So I got the big Fortune 500 business analyst job. And my plan was always to quit after a while, do it for a while, gain some experience, see what it's like. But then again, as happens with people, it gets comfortable. The paycheck is safe and familiar. You develop the inertia just to keep doing the same thing. And you get promoted, they pay you more, it gets even more comfortable. And for me, it was 3 realizations. One was that if I didn't quit and try having a crack at doing this magic stuff, which was still my creative passion, I knew that I would, go to my death wondering what if. And I know that's always the most common regret people have on their deathbed at age whatever, is that they never tried the thing. They never took that risk and tried that big thing that they wanted to try. And I realized I didn't want to have that regret. I did not want to be, you know, 87 dying of bowel cancer statistically and go, man, I spent my whole life in middle management or whatever. So I knew I had to do it. Number two, I realized, because I was waiting till I felt ready, right? I was waiting till I was ready. I had everything kind of lined up. And number two was I realized I was never going to feel ready. There would absolutely never be a point where I was sufficiently ready to feel comfortable. That was never going to come. And so then Revelation 3 was going, well, if I'm never going to feel ready, I might as well do it sooner unready than later unready and get on with it now. Get out there and start making the mistakes sooner. I'd already probably waited longer than I should have at that point, being 5 years in the job. And sure. that was when I quit. I wrote my resignation letter that day.
There's something about, yeah, realizing that that door is never going to open itself. I think it was a college counselor and former teacher and director I had in college, and I was asking about, you know, what if I should I get a fallback? Should I minor in something else? You know, should I major in something else? And he was just like, you know, those who have a fallback usually fall back. And I think that's pretty solid advice, because it's hard for me to say, you know, if you want something, you go out and get it, because that's just, it's hard. It's really hard to push yourself to do anything when we live in a society where you can do, especially in America, you can really do the minimal amount of work in a lot of cases and be fine and be okay, and you'll have a great life. You may not be like a multimillionaire, but you'll get by and you'll be able to have a family on that. So the push that you have to give yourself, and just the mental change you have to, the switch you have to make in your brain, I think is your biggest obstacle when deciding whether or not you want to go professional in anything artistic.
And this is as the title of this episode implies, to or not to go pro. I have complete respect for people who decide not to and decide to stick the same path.
I have more respect for people. I know amazing magicians, guys that can do sleights, you know, circles around professionals I know that choose not to because they just don't want to deal with that grind. And that's admirable. That's something very cool.
Well, it's like anything. Going pro in the arts, at least for most people, I think, is what you are doing is you are taking a gamble. You are going much higher risk for potentially much higher reward. And the risk is obviously, you know, a desperate, grindy, shitty life where you don't make enough and don't get a 401k and eventually have to go back to a crappier job than you would have because of your lack of experience in the meantime. But the reward is to be able to potentially do even better financially doing something you love and are passionate about. Sure. Because the best case in arts and entertainment is much better than as a wage slave. It's not as good as entrepreneur running your own company, but even that is, you know, that's one in 10 million people anyway who actually do a startup. And yeah, so you're trading high risk for high reward. And I wouldn't still be doing this if I didn't think there was a very real possibility that I can make this work. And by work, I mean get very financially comfortable, make very decent money doing this thing that I'm actually into.
I didn't
think that was possible. It's not there yet, but it's the possibility feels like it increases as time passes and I keep doing more stuff and getting better and getting more experienced and learning more about how it works and how to make it work and everything like that.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest slaps in the face to me was when we got back from Macau and things really slowed down. I still had a couple of my regular gigs, kept doing the same typical things I was doing in LA, but it's weird because the biggest challenge in going pro is obviously the lack of having a steady paycheck, but in a different aspect, it's getting a huge paycheck and then not getting a paycheck close to that for a while. It's a roller coaster ride in where your income comes from. So if you're not somebody who's good with money and good at managing money, it's going to be a challenge. And that seems to be a recurring theme with people you and I have both worked with who have been doing this their whole lives, who are, you know, 60, 70, who are terrible with money because, you know, they did really well at one point and then drained it away.
I mean, that's it. Higher highs and lower lows. It's a much more intense existence.
Yeah, yeah. You have to be grounded. I'm somebody who, you know, who kind of battles that on a daily or weekly basis of, you know, minor depression, minor anxiety, things like that. And if you don't have a firm grasp on yourself, like you said, when the highs are high, it's going to hit you. And when the lows are low, it's really going to hit you. So you kind of have to know who you are as a person. That should be one of the first fundamental building blocks before you decide to take that leap.
I genuinely recommend studying Zen, for example.
Sure.
For real, completely, whether it's in a meditative form or a philosophy form, and just making sure that when things are great, they won't always be that way. But also when things are terrible, they won't always be that way. And always going, you know, what is, things will eventually balance themselves out. You have a lot of control, but in no way supreme control over your destiny, and so forth.
Yeah,
just
all
trying to maintain balance.
Yeah, all the guys that I know who have their head on straight use some sort of philosophy like that, between you and a few other people that are really great here in LA and around the country. And yeah, I mean, you gotta just you gotta be grounded. You gotta know. I don't know where happiness comes from, I think, before you seek it out in your profession. I think that's a dangerous thing. A lot of people say, you know, you do what makes you happy, you'll never work a day in your life. And I don't think that's necessarily true.
To those people, I tell them to go fuck themselves. It's like,
it's a dangerous sword to be playing with that over every day. Here's the thing that makes me happy, and also it depends whether or not my family eats. So
yeah, and also here's the thing that makes me happy. Now that it's my source of income, you have to then do it in lots of ways that no longer make you happy.
Sure.
Such as taking a gig. As we know, most walk-around gigs are just shitty, soul-destroying, crappy gigs where you're doing what you love in a twisted parody of itself that actually makes it horrible.
You have to
eat and pay rent and feed your family now.
I have so much respect for guys who legitimately love corporate work and legitimately love like doing trade shows and things like that in a completely non-ironic way. I really do have respect for that because a lot of those are tough gigs and you're performing for people that don't want to be performed for. And sure, you're making money. Those are usually the better paychecks, but I don't have
I would say not so much respect as envy.
Yeah, sure.
Because there's nothing to respect about that. They're just lucky that they enjoy that kind of thing. Damn, yeah. I'm envious of that. Like, I wish I enjoyed merchant banking and I'd be a multimillionaire by now.
Being a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I enjoyed dentistry. If I was as into dentistry or stockbroking or whatever as I was into magic, holy crap.
Man, it'd be so much easier. You bring up dentistry. My dentist is so into dentistry, it's not even funny.
I've
had her my whole life. She's like seen everybody in my family. And the last time I was in there, she literally said, "Wow, you have the same gum line as your mom." I'm like, "How do you know that?" That is crazy.
The same way that we know when a deck is well cut or badly cut from the factory. Your field. You're passionate about it. And you can't choose what makes your soul resonate, what you're really into.
We have the ability to walk into a room and know how hard we're gonna have to work in that show just by kind of glancing around. That we have, you know, because of these weird passions, you get those strange skill sets in any career. So it's not strange for her as a dentist, but it's strange as an outsider. The same way we would be like, oh, he's doing this, this, and this with this particular illusion.
I remember the moment where I realized I had gained the ability to, and everyone, we can all do this, pick up a deck and know whether it has jokers in or not, just by the weight.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell by weight, 52 versus 54 cards.
Which seemed crazy, but really, if you have something in your hand that much, that's what she said, you understand.
Yeah, it's like I was just talking about the totems in Inception, an object that you know so well and so intimately, you know if it's real or someone else's projection of it. Just anything you handle that much, you gain that much deep domain expertise about it.
Yeah.
And look, even though it'd be better to be passionate about dentistry or stockbroking financially, it's still way better to be into magic than acting. My heart bleeds for the actors. It really does. Like, again, it's, you know, I envy the people who enjoy the lucrative stuff, and I, what's the opposite of envy? I pity? That sounds too disparaging. Like, my heart goes out to them. It's, I know it's even tougher for them because mm-hmm. their odds of financial stability and success are 100 times less than us.
Yeah. It's, so on that note, on that note, how do you rationalize certain things in terms of whether it's a gig you take or whether it's a choice you have to make for, I don't know, rent or a purchase? Mm. How do you, because for me, that's maybe one of the biggest struggles is being rational about things. Like, it wasn't rational at all for us to pick up all of our stuff and move across the country to LA 2 years ago, but we did it just because we felt like it was what we should do. So, and in your case, moving across the world,
it's funny, it changes constantly, obviously, because life changes, the world changes, you change, and everything you have to acknowledge, everything in life is a gamble. Even the safe option is a gamble. It's nothing's guaranteed. You get the stable job and stable company. That stable company, there might be a recession. I mean, shit, GFC. How many people lost their jobs of decades with, you know, very little payout potentially? Everything's a gamble. You might, take the stable job, but then the economy changes, technology changes, and suddenly your skill set isn't employable anymore after 30 years in the business. And now you've got to go and be a barista again. That happens. That can happen. It's less likely. It's just a slightly safer gamble, right? Lower risk, but not zero risk. So everything's a gamble. Anything could end horribly or potentially end well. And for me, in terms of, I now take basically every gig, unless it's a truly, genuinely awful gig, because money is money, and that's good, and there is nobility in just earning your keep to survive. That's important. That's a very primal thing. You know, many people have to do many things to make it through. We are incredibly privileged that we don't have to clean a sewer to make a living, or all the thousands of worst things people all over the world have to do. You know, we're not in a sweatshop. God damn, who am I to complain about a walk-around gig? I'll complain about it, but I'll do it because I need to pay my rent. But for purchases, I will, and this comes moving to LA as well, which was obviously incredibly expensive, I will consider an investment anything that increases my ability to get better at what I do. Because I'm doubling down on that. That's my gamble. I'm going into magic performance, this field, and I'm going to try and make my fortune and my career doing that and being good at that. So anything that increases my ability and my skill set and my experience in that field, I go for.
Sure.
And sometimes that makes my finance, has in the past 7 years of full-time magic, has made my finances a little scary. But it, and I don't yet know if it's going to pay off. It feels like it is. Like, one of the reasons I'm at this festival is the 5 years I've worked on this show, having spent probably tens of thousands of dollars now on props and materials and experiments. A lot of those materials I used to build stuff that didn't work, but it got me closer to a design that did eventually work. And if that ends up paying off, it's a huge potential payoff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like starting a startup. You don't know if it's going to work, but you give it a shot and you invest in it.
Yeah, and I think advice in terms of like purchasing things for this job, whether it's your show or close up or marketing, whatnot, just be mindful of what you're purchasing and if it's going to pay off. Because I think you see it a lot on certain like kind of Facebook groups of people selling stuff and people buying things. I see there's times when I've either sold something or seen somebody buy something, and you kind of look at what they do and you're like, oh, I don't know why you'd be spending, you know, a couple grand on this prop when it doesn't seem like you're going to use it. Or I've talked to people that are like, yeah, I buy 4 microphones just to have backups. I'm like, are you doing that many shows? You need to have 4 microphones?
Yeah. Two's fine. Two is fine.
And I'm like, I've gotten better at it, but I'm the cheapest of the cheap when it comes to a prop. I'm like, yep, this will do. And I use it for 4 years or 10 years, whatever. I'm still using the same Ring Flight I bought in high school. One day that's not going to end well.
And that depends. It's often a judgment call on what is your core competency, to use a term from back from my business analyst days. What is it that you're selling and why are people buying it? Mm-hmm. And then if it enhances the reasons people are going to give you money, then it's worth investing in. And if it's not, it's probably not. But then the problem with doing your passion as your career, it's emotional as well. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a bad thing because it can make you make questionable choices, but it's a good thing because it's your source of drive and focus and determination, mm-hmm. so much more than any other job that you're less passionate about.
Yeah, and so, going back to what you were talking about earlier, something I kind of learned out here is, yeah, take every gig. The guys that are really working are kind of taking everything that comes their way, which is good. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of stumbled into something recently where I've done this small little gig here locally, and it's fine. It's not bad. I'm not going far. I'm doing, you know, a 20-minute show. I'm in and out. It's fine. But I'm realizing that I'm at a point where I think it might actually be hurting my brand, if you will, because I'm above it. And I don't say that in an egotistical way. I say that in I've been doing this long enough to where I don't think I should be doing this type of gig anymore. And, yeah. you know, I'm somebody that'll still do a library show. I'll still do a family show. I probably won't do a birthday party. But in this particular case, it's kind of thrown me for a loop because I've always been in that mindset of, yeah, take it. If it's a decent gig and it's going to be fine, take it, make the money, even if it's lower paying. So that's kind of a bundle I'm in right now, which goes to your point that you were making, I think, a minute or two ago.
Yeah, well, it's also the process of doing the survival phase where you got to pay the rent and get it done. While, I mean, for me, the plan is working towards a position where I can then only, where I've built a brand and an identity and a reputation that means then you can actually do the really good stuff and not worry about the grind. And that's definitely the end game, is get to a point where you've got something so unique and such a good marketing network and everything like that that you can then, quote unquote, live the dream actually, as opposed to what people perceive.
Yeah, marketing is a good point to jump off to. I think for me, what really helped in LA when I got to LA was knowing what my strong points were, strengths. That's a better way to say that. What my strengths were, and what my weaknesses were, and to not do things that I was weak at, because I think people, a general public, would see that and. I don't know. I wouldn't be as confident. It wouldn't work. And I think you have to know how you are perceived and what, I don't know, makes you stand out a little bit. And it's really tough because in LA, it's a land full of a million magicians. And you can't always stand out to somebody who's just kind of price shopping if they're just booking a corporate event or a house party or something like that.
But again, it's... And this is the, and I was about, what I was about to say was, but if they're price shopping, they're not the clients you want anyway.
Sure.
But that depends. Some people do need that. And this is always I'm wary of advice. Whenever people are giving out advice, a lot of advice people have given out over my life has been useless to me because my situation was different to theirs.
Yeah, totally. Take all this with a grain of salt. It's just, these are both our personal experiences and they're probably wrong. All of this is terribly, awfully wrong. But listen, anyway.
Well, and all of this is correct for some people and wrong for other people, and that's where eventually it comes down to you, dear listener. You have to eventually decide if what of this applies to you and what of this is useless to you. And it's just tricky. There's no objectively great advice because everyone has different issues they're dealing with and different advantages they've been blessed with. And for example, like I mean, I know a guy. I have a friend who is. I'm much better at magic than him, sleight of hand performance, misdirection, crowd engagement, all this stuff, but he's much better at sales and marketing than me, and we both envy each other's gifts.
Sure.
I'm trying to work better at my sales and marketing, he wishes he could do stuff that's as good as I can do, and we, you know, what advice would you give to each of us? Well, it's totally different advice. Different things come easily to us, different things are what we struggle with.
Well, that's the biggest secret of being a professional performer or whatever. You're really just a salesman. I mean, I think if magic didn't exist, if performing didn't exist for a lot of these guys, they would essentially be car salesmen or office salesmen of some sort. And that what you just described in your friend, I think, is 80-70% of corporate magicians. They're really good at selling something, and they're not it's not that they're bad, but it's not.
They're not adequate.
Yeah, they're proficient at their job.
Competent. Yeah, exactly.
Which is enough for corporate America. They don't know the difference. And that's, I mean, I'm in the same boat as you. I certainly struggle with the selling aspect. I grew up in my dad's an amazing salesman, and I just did not get that gene. I don't want to tell somebody why I'm good. I'm just like, here, yeah, take a look at the video if you want.
Well, it's that thing with whether it's your quality of your sales or your product. You can succeed by being McDonald's, mediocre quality product, adequate, right? Not a bad product. It's fine. It delivers what it promises, which is a cheap, easy, vaguely tasty burger, and then, you know, just sells and delivers in markets, versus being some one-of-a-kind gourmet restaurant that works to a much smaller clientele for a much higher price. It's a totally different business model, and both can be very successful, depending on how you approach it. There are many paths up the mountain. And that's I think, if you're going pro in magic, much like in any field, is, and you don't have to have this at the start, but make sure you're at least thinking about what is your business model. And this is something I learned at a business school in the UK way back. A business plan, or a business, consists of A, who is going to give you money, or rather, sorry, A, who is going to give you, B, how much money, C, for what? What are they getting out of it? It's like, who is giving you the money, how much money are they going to give you, and what are they giving it to you for? And until you have answers to all of those three, you don't have a business. So for example, kids shows, parents are giving you a couple of $100 to entertain their kid for their party. Cool, right? Cruise ships, a cruise ship line is giving you $2,000-$4,000 $4,000 for a week to enhance the experience of their guests who have paid way more than that for tickets on the cruise. Corporate entertainment, Brenda from HR, who's planning the party on behalf of Big Brenda. Corp Limited, is giving you a few $1,000s to make the party good so the employees are happy, to increase employee morale.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be something completely different. And all of these are totally different businesses, and they all have different numbers of people who are going to do it. Or if you're doing solo, if you're doing a fringe festival show, like we talked about before, that's Bob and Linda J. Public are giving you $30 for an hour of entertainment on their date night.
Bob and Linda J. Public sounds like an insurance group of some sort.
Yeah, that could be the corporate too. And yeah, all of these have totally different things. Are you doing theme park gigs versus kids gigs versus corporate events versus private events versus going the Steve Cohen model and four-walling your own, you know, elite show? These are all very different business models with different marketing needs, different sales needs, different quality needs. You know, who are your clients? If they're fancy people, you need to care about your clothes more. If they're not, you don't. And your priorities end up being different. Are you going to be one of those people who just invents tricks and sells it to magicians? In that case, it's A, magicians, B, giving you however many tens or hundreds of dollars for C, so that they can get a trick that makes them think it'll improve their life in whatever way.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest recommendation, is think about how are you actually planning to make money out of this? And I was talking to this with a guy who's really into cardistry, and that's a much more nebulous business model if you're a cardist. And for example, the answer might be, if you're a really good cardist, which looks great on Instagram, it might be companies are going to give you small amounts of dollars per click-through for advertising on your social media or YouTube channel. That can work. It's a much less predictable, reliable income stream. So again, that's the biggest advice, is really thinking about what is your business model, and then A, who's going to give you money, how do you find them and let them know you exist? B, how much money are they going to give you? How can you increase that as much as possible? And then C, what they're giving it to you for, how do you increase your ability to deliver on that? Because that helps with A and B.
Yeah, I think having some sort of knowledge of a business background is essential to do this professionally. I mean, if I could do this again, I would probably, instead of majoring in theater, I'd minor in theater, and I'd get a business degree of some sort, just to have those foundations. I've had to do the work on my own after getting out of school, self-teaching and learning from the internet of how to do these things. And if you don't have that stability, that ground to stand on, it's really going to kick you in the butt.
And the other thing that I came up is, forget about publicity, forget about PR, forget about marketing. What matters is learning sales. Marketing and publicity are useful only if they improve your sales function.
That's an interesting concept.
Because I've seen people do all the marketing in the world. Marketing, marketing, marketing. Yeah, until you make a sale, you've gained nothing from your marketing. Sales is where the rubber hits the road. It's like how you actually booking the gig, say, is the same synonym for the same thing.
So you're telling me all those times I watched The Office, I was actually learning something.
Hey, turns out.
That was an awful analogy, and I'm just going to let, we're just going to sit in silence here so I can absorb how terrible that joke was.
I haven't actually watched The Office, so I don't know.
Well, that's, you have
a piece of pop culture
yet.
That has escaped me. I haven't learned to live. Teach me to live, Nick.
That's what I'm doing with these podcasts. This is all for you.
Oh my God, this is all a big, this is the Truman Show.
This is one giant Truman Show. I was listening, I think it was listening to Fresh Air or something, and there are so many people now, because of social media, that think their life is the Truman Show. It's
yeah.
Fascinating.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Totally.
Some of them it is.
Total tangent here, nothing to do with the topic, but maybe that's your marketing strategy. Maybe you're the magician who convinces people they're on the Truman Show. Give me 10%. I think we covered those types.
It's tough to give advice because for some people it'll be easy and it'll be great and they'll mostly love it and kick ass. Others will find it a nightmarish grind and suck at it. It just depends on you. It's so dependent on so many things that there's no way to give advice across the board. And I think just the biggest advice is know what you're getting into. And what you're getting into is something that will probably be much tougher than you think. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Like, for me, I still think it's worth it. I don't regret the decision at all. I mean, in some ways I regret the decision, but overall, if you add up all the ways that I'm happier and my life is better and subtract the many ways in which my life is more stressful and worse, it still comes out as a net positive. It's still better.
Yeah,
but it's not without, you know, make sure you know, it's that whole thing, the pain of, either path has pain, it's the pain of hard work or the pain of regret, or the pain of what, either way there's going to be tough stuff, you just decide which evil is the lesser of the two evils for you.
Yeah, I'm reading a book now, pretty popular pop culture book, The Art of Not Giving a Fuck or something like that.
I think I've heard of it.
That's not the title, and my Kindle is over there, and it's so far away. I don't want to walk over there.
Magic has taught you hard work,
everybody. Okay, I got to do it. Just everybody wait. I'm going to do this.
Hey, everybody. While Nick gets his Kindle, okay. I'm going to try and work out some way. Oh, he's back.
Literally
okay.
5 inches away from me. But, okay, so I go to my setting center here, and it is The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. There we go, by right. Mark Manson. Fairly popular, but I think you have to... How do we get into this spot?
Knowing what your choice is. You're choosing which pain you're going to deal with.
Yes, and they talk about that, and they talk about where happiness comes... It's essentially a book on Zen philosophy, but in a very modern and kind of lots of swears to represent what they're trying to get across. But knowing where your happiness is going to come from and the path of least resistance and how much effort, usually, and one of the subjects they talked about is happiness comes from hard work. And usually people who are unhappy are just not fulfilled enough and they're just not doing enough and they're not working hard enough or they're not doing something that they enjoy. They obviously could be working very hard at something, but they're not doing something that fulfills them. So if you want to take the risk and go for something that you think will fulfill you, obviously going pro is a good choice in that. I don't know. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, completely.
Anything else you want to throw in there? We're hitting about 40 minutes now.
Oh, wow. Time flies when you're doing it coast to coast.
Time flies when you're telling people what they should do with their careers.
Yeah, or what not to. It's tricky. It's one of the most difficult decisions I ever made. It was one of the best decisions I ever made. It continues. I feel like my life feels like it's in sort of the middle act of an action-adventure movie where things are coming along but very challenging and you don't yet know whether it's going to end well or in tragedy. But it makes for a hell of an exciting journey that we're on right now.
Yeah. Yeah, just know what you're getting into and know that it's going to be harder than you can possibly imagine. And the hot. I think the simplest thing is just going back to what you said earlier. The highs are high and the lows are low. And I mean, there are days when I wake up and I'm like, this is the best job ever. And there are days like today when I woke up and was like, I think I'm done.
Actually, you know what? It might be a good thought, at least for me to end it on, is something I do remember that I hadn't thought about before was when I quit my job and I turned on the final day, you know, I gave a month's notice and worked out the end of the job. And on the day I left, I handed in my ID card, handed in my pass key, left the building. And I felt it was that whole thing. It was excitement and a mixture of incredible excitement and utter terror. But I felt more alive and present in the world than I had in years.
Totally.
I was so there, connected to the universe, and have been ever since.
That was I had that same exact experience. I mean, it was a performance gig, and it was at Disney. That it was when I went in for contract renewals, and I had the option. They offered me another year of money of performing weekly, a weekly paycheck to perform. And I said, no thanks, and left. And we came out here to LA, and same exact thing. It was utterly exhilarating and terrifying. Mm. And, I mean, those are the moments that you certainly feel alive the most. And, man, if you're thinking about making a change with your career, I mean, it doesn't have to be magic. It can be art. It can be whatever. Going through that experience is pretty cool. And I had never gotten to that point before. Or had never truly gone through that before. It was pretty wild.
Yeah.
And we're just going to sit in silence.
Yeah, big time. As I think back over the last 7 years, what's that, that Voltaire quote? A person is free at the moment they wish to be.
Ooh.
If they wish it enough.
That's a good
one. And it's also a very first world problems quote, but there's still validity in it.
Well, the thing
is, if you're privileged enough not to actually be enslaved or to be economically enslaved, and everything else, some people just don't have the opportunity, and that's because the world is unfair. But if you have the opportunity, it's up to you whether you take that or not.
Yeah, and I think
unbelievably privileged enough to even have a chance, you don't have to take it.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the option has value.
Our conversations in Macau helped me through that a lot, because I was somebody that kind of overly thought about that and thought about, oh, this is, you know, I'm too privileged. Why am I doing this? You know, other people deserve this more. And you just have to get to a state in your mind knowing that's okay. Life isn't fair, but I'm going to try to pursue what makes me happy and hopefully help people out along the way.
Exactly. And be compassionate for those less fortunate and privileged than yourself.
I mean, it just comes out, don't be a dick.
Yeah. Well, it's also that everything we talked about with Rick and Morty. You know, what is it? The universe is chaotic. Everyone's going to die. Nothing makes sense. Let's do some card tricks.
I love how even with like this business framed episode, we still go back to Rick and Morty. Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you like the podcast, please give us 5 stars on the iTunes there. If you didn't like the podcast, don't. I am on social media at Nick Paul Magic. Simon is at Things by Simon.
Right, is literally whatever app you have open, type Things by Simon into it and you'll find me.
Yeah, yeah. And fan mail or hate mail, twomagicians1mike@gmail.com. And if you want to give us a couple bucks here and there to support the podcast, you can PayPal us, twomagicians1mike@gmail.com. My name is Nick Paul. That's Simon Cornell. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.